All right, guys, we're going to get started here with episode 44 in just 1 minute. But first, I wanted to tell you about Law & Chevrolet Buick, located in Boonville, Indiana. Family-owned sales and service center, ready to take care of all of your new or used car needs. You ready to trade in your car? They're ready to give you a Kelley Blue Book instant cash offer, ready in minutes. They got 2020 cars on the lots now, so you're talking a 2020 Colorado, Equinox. They even got the brand new 2020 Silverados, 2500 HD edition. Go check out all these great new cars and make sure that you do it at Law Chevrolet. If you have any service needs, make sure their service department take great care of you, because you know it's going to get fixed right the first time, and they're going to take great care of you. Make sure you call Dylan Winters, their sales manager. You know, let him make sure that you get a great deal and that you're happy with your experience. Because if you buy a vehicle anywhere else, it ain't the tires that you're going to be kicking.
Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
So we're back, the weekly, bi-weekly, tri-weekly episode of Dialed In with Jake and Zach, episode 40. We've been really, really busy, and that's not an excuse. That's just the truth. We're going to try to get back to somewhat a normal schedule here. Maybe after this nice little hectic week gets over with, and you know, Zach and I found ourselves here in Montgomery last weekend, and it's going to be a little bit behind with our interview because we did it a week later, and boy, cracked him again. So anyway, Zach, we kind of just lost in the same round on the opposite end of the weekend there.
Yeah. Pretty much had a great time down at Montgomery, and you're right, man, it's just been insane. Lots of stuff going on. I knew this stretch coming up for me racing wise was going to be a marathon. I'm not used to racing, you know, at least 2 or 3 days a week every weekend, you know, for long stretches. So, but it's been fun. You know, we did Dragway 42, had a good time up there, my first time at that facility for the SFG Buckeye Bracket Nationals. Had a great time, good facility. If you haven't been there yet, you just should go. As far as a bracket racer, I it's just an awesome place, and they've done a great job with it. Super smooth, great starting line. The weather was great when we were up there. We really got spoiled, man. It was 80 degrees outside, and then turned around to go to Hall of Montgomery the next weekend, and it's 110 degrees in the shade, and that's not an exaggeration. not an exaggeration. I joked on Facebook about Jake causing the four-wheeler tire to go flat. It was just, a four-wheeler tire, honest to God, it's got to be 15 years old, if not older than that. And it just slime started. It got so hot sitting in the sun, the slime started bubbling out of the dry rot. It was just nasty hot. But I had a great time in Montgomery. It's officially my favorite racetrack. It's number one on my list now. I just had the last two times I've been there. Of course, winning a 10 grand, you're always going to have a great time. But going back this time, and the track's just always consistent. It's safe. It's easy to slow down. You know, it's just nice. I really, really enjoy racing there and can't wait to go back again. And it's been an interesting stretch for sure. So you fared fairly well.
Yeah. 13 take 3 got smacked by the guy you ran four times in one weekend. Again, yeah. You have that one guy everywhere you go that you run 7 or 8 times.
Yeah, it's mostly this year it's been old Axe Daddy, Chad Axford. And, you know, this time it happened to be, I think his name is Hickman is his last name. And he drives a Camaro Brute Torque, and I believe it's him and his dad. They were wearing people out all weekend, going a lot of rounds. Yeah, I ended up running the same guy four times. I ran Gage Birch twice and ran Kevin Rodden twice. I just can't get away from running the same people over and over again.
Yeah, I ran the famed Kevin Rodden, K&R's Kevin Rodden, and I was perfect, get behind 3,000. He showed me 9 totals, so hello. But yeah, the Brute Torque Camaros, I ran Friday night down at that 4-door cars, and I feel like I'm 8.5 feet tall, and I get out and I say, no deal. They were all talking, and they said, okay. I was driving quite well. 13 take 3, though. I'll take that lap quite often right there anyway. But he laid down 11 total, so I was just, look real hero, like 5,000 unders. It was awesome, an awesome time at Montgomery. It was crazy to see a 14-year-old win $50,000 And I'm not saying it's crazy because of the rules. I'm not saying anything. But imagine going to your freshman year of high school with a $50,000 cardboard check and all the ladies you can pick up doing that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What a great picture to have on his Facebook wall with that big 50 grand picture on it. Casey Pesnell, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess whatever you think about it, I have mixed opinions on it for sure. I guess to go in that a little bit, I mean, there are rules. I know in bracket racing it's somewhat loose. You know, we may not. I mean, hell, I don't have NHRA license. You know, my belts may be a year out. You know, all that stuff. So I can't sit here and get on my high soapbox and say that I follow all the rules. You know, that's for sure. But that one I think may be a little bit bigger than some of the other ones, and I'm not sure exactly how insurance policies are written.
I can tell you
for racetracks. But I believe that is
legally drive on a highway, you cannot legally drive on a racetrack whether you are 13 or 33.
Right. And there's a junior dragster class, so that is the class that you are able to run. And in my opinion, and like I said, a lot of people may not agree with me, you have a lot of time in your life to race big cars starting at 16 years old. You know, I don't understand the impatience in waiting for that. You know, and you can race up and you can race junior dragsters. You know, that is the class for you. And I don't understand what the thought process is of this rule doesn't apply to me and applies, you know, but it somehow should apply to other people, or just, you know, I don't quite understand that mindset as far as that stuff goes. And my worry is that it's going to encourage more people to do that, and that we're going to end up seeing more of that. And I hope not, because, you know, at the end of the day, we all know what is capable of happening when we're behind the wheels of these cars. And I would hate to see that happen. And that could end up, I mean, I don't know the ending ramifications on it. I could see legal ramifications, obviously, you know, horrible ramifications if anything was to happen to a kid behind the wheel of a car like that. Casey, though, I give you props. Obviously, you can handle the vehicle. I'm not saying that you cannot drive the vehicles. You obviously can at a very high level, and I respect that a great deal. But my opinion and my advice is be patient. Be patient. You have a lot of time to do this, and you can do it for a long period of time starting at 16 years old and not cause a lot of problems. But at the end of the day, you know, he was still racing on Sunday. So whatever that says, you know, I'm just glad that nothing happened.
Well, I'll play a little devil's advocate on that. I had talked to Casey just afterwards, just briefly. His maturity level is obviously a little higher than most 14-year-olds. His intensity to hop in one race car that he's never set in before and go to a $50,000 final. You walk up there and he was cool as a cucumber. I mean, he was absolutely just down to earth, just chilled out. You went up there, 009, and yeah, he was out of the gas because the other car spun. However, you know, what my problem lies with the adults in that camp. Not that he's in a race car even, but if you're going to put a 14-year-old in a race car, things happen. Whether he can drive the race car or not, things happen. Things break. Obviously, catastrophic failure happens. I would never, ever, ever send my kid down any kind of racetrack, any kind of situation in a fire jacket and basketball shorts. Ever. Not ever. Never, ever. And then whenever he was asked to put fire pants on, whoever was from their camp, the uncle, the grandpa, the dad, and I don't know, honestly don't know, wheeled up on the golf cart and threw a fit about it. You know, at that point, you know, you have your 14-year-old that's racing, you know, morally really should not be, and you're asked to put pants on him, you're asked to make him a little safer than what he is. That's where my issue lies. You know what, just put pants on. If you just put right. pants on, come up here and run the final round, nobody's going to say anything else the rest of the night. And you know, the right move in that area, you can't really just disqualify him because you let him go all day long. But you can say, young man, congratulations, you know, that's awesome, you did a hell of a job, come back and race me whenever you can, provide at least a learner's permit. You know, something, some kind of ID that says you can drive on any highway somewhere, somehow.
Right.
But my problem doesn't lie within his age. My problem lies within the people he looks up to in that situation. And I don't know them. I can't tell you one way or the other. I know it's common for people down there to race in shorts. It's common for that to happen. I understand that. But he looks up to that and he thinks that's okay.
Right.
And 490 at 14 years old is pretty quick. I mean, it feels like it's, I'm sure by now it feels like it's just another day in the park for him. But man, things happen. Things happen all the time. I mean, the Pro Mod Wreck at I-22 over the weekend shows you things happen.
Yep.
And
Jake, I wanted to ask you, because you know, I'm sure, more about this than I do, as far as the, like, the, in Indiana at least, I do know if you can get a judge to sign off as far as racing sprint cars on a dirt track, you can start at 14, can't you? As long as you have that paper signed by a judge?
Yeah, emancipated, yes.
Right.
I was emancipated at 13 to do that. And still, that's a really big gray area. The track has to their attorney writes up a release form that your parents are liable for anything that happens to you, no matter what, on or off the racetrack on that property. Mm-hmm. It's a really big deal. You know, guys like Jeff Gordon and Chase Briscoe had to go through the same thing because they wouldn't let them race. You know, they were just kids.
Right.
And they had to be emancipated, and they had to move up. They had to start at the tail every week, and they had to, you know, pretty much race with training wheels on. And mm-hmm. we don't really have a way to do that, you know, in our sport. But 490s in basketball shorts, isn't it? I mean, come on.
Well, I would think, though, at least, you know, a piece of paper and that type of a release, like you were saying, with the liability on the parents. I mean, that in that case, I may be more okay with it. You know, as far as then, at least, you know, the track isn't in jeopardy of having something happen where, I mean, it could all be over. I mean, a lawsuit could be so big and something like that. It could all be done.
Well, that there's many stories that go back. If the right person in the association that the track is sanctioned by finds out about this, they will absolutely pull it and fine it right then. I mean, that's it. And if they really find out that he's raced there pretty much weekly since the time he turned 14, it's not good at all.
Yeah.
Because he races there quite often. He lives, you know, he doesn't live in, I mean, he races at Holiday Beach the most. I mean, down a little bit further south, West Blockton, Alabama. But he has raced in Montgomery Super 7 Series and everything. And I'm not knocking the kid one bit. I am proud of that. I am proud of the way he drove. I'm proud of the way he carried himself. I said from the time I looked at him, his maturity level was way more than 14. And I have no doubt he can drive a race car. I just wish he'd be a little safer about it.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I just want to make that clear for everybody. I feel the same way. I think that, you know, he's obviously a great driver, and he obviously has a huge future in front of him to already be driving at such a high level at such a young age. I just think that, you know, there needs to be a little bit more control as far as how young we're allowing people to jump in at these big cars. But once again, you know, great job, but let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's be patient. There's plenty of time. So that's my thoughts on it. So anyway, didn't want to turn the whole podcast into that. You know,
that was our Emotion Solutions final round discussion right there. Sorry, we took the middle of the episode.
I think we come up with something else for that in a little bit. Did want to say, I got to make sure I shout out Siebert Performance. So Sunday, I'm sorry, my first two rounds were my first two entries in the first round, I got beat. Was almost hesitant to buy them both back. Was maybe going to buy one back. You know, wasn't hitting the tree all that well the first round. Kristen, you know, helped talk me back into it. Helped give me some confidence to get back up there. And then the car made two back-to-back runs dead in within 10 minutes. So transmission a lot hotter the second time than it was the first time. Dead onto the 1,000, both runs. And I'm talking almost all the way down the racetrack. I think the 60s varied ones, the 330 were varied one different, and at the finish line it was identical. And then it turned around second round and did the exact same thing again. A little bit different number, because I know, as Jake can attest to, the track kind of was moving around a little bit on Sunday.
Yeah, they did not spray the VHT on Sunday. That's confirmed. Yeah.
But anyway, it was very consistent. And I really, a lot of that is because of that Siebert Performance carburetor on there. It's awesome. And I guess with that, we're going to hear from our buddy Luke Bagaki at thisisbracketracing.com.
Yep, that's right. The Brainerd top dragster runner-up, Luke Bagaki.
What's up, dialed in listeners? This is Luke Bogacki for thisisbracketracing.com. Listen, you have invested a ton of time, energy, resources into your racing operations. You deserve to see a return on that investment in terms of win lights. That's where we come in. Specifically in this day and age of ultra-competitive eighth-mile bracket competition, our cars are far better than we are. I can go dead on. You can go dead on. Seemingly every car at the racetrack can go dead on. The starting line is the biggest variable. In fact, I would argue that it's not close. You need to hit the tree. That matters nearly every round and at every level of competition. I can help. Exclusively for you, dialed in listeners, we're giving away one of our best reaction time trainings for free. It's about determining how tight you can and should set up on the tree to take advantage of your starting line skills while guarding against throwing it all away with a red light. Check it out. Again, it's free at thisisbracketracing.com/dialedtree. Again, that's thisisbracketracing.com/dialed, as in dialed in podcast, tree, all one word. thisisbracketracing.com/dialedtree.
All right, and here on the phone with me today, our most recent man that has bought the set of dialed-in stickers and then went out, and they must have been good luck, and on top of that, a very skilled racer, Mike Donnell. He's the runner-up 10K last year on Friday at the 10 Grand Nationals up at Norwalk. He runned up a loose rocker race last year at the Liberty Classic in a 2018 Magnolia Track Champion in No Box, but most recently, the Sunday 25K winner at the SFG Buckeye Bracket Nationals. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
Well, not much. Enjoying the victory still, you know, letting it sink in.
Well, yeah, that was awesome, and definitely a huge win for you. I was definitely happy to see you get it, and happy to have you here on the show. And so, you know, first off, just trying to let everybody know kind of, you know, where you came from and just kind of your racing background, how you got to where you are now.
Well, I started when I was 10 years old and a junior. Wanted one, you know, when I was 8, and you know, I knew I could race. And my dad, we had to save up a little bit. We weren't the most, you know, wealthy family, you know, so it took us a few years to get there. My dad was racing every weekend himself, you know. He really didn't like to miss racing himself. And when we finally got me one, it wasn't the fastest or the nicest, but it got down from A to B. And started out going like 17 seconds, pull start, little 5-horse Briggs & Stratton. Then after a little bit after that, he bought a little motor for me and started going like 1250s, same car. Ran that for probably until I was about 14, probably about 4 years. And then I got a new car, won a track championship with that in 2006, actually.
And that was at what track?
Quaker City. Then after that, I turned 16. My dad said, all right, you're on your own. You can drive a car now. Because he was the type of guy that all the junior guys, you know, their dads, they help them on the starting line with the idle and all that. My dad was start it and go do your thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was eventually we worked into, you know, we had to start turning the idle up after I got that new car. It was a little bit different. So it was a lot of work back then to run my car and him run. It was like they ran juniors in between sometimes. It was a little rough. But so when we turned 16, me and Justin Vickers, that's Skirt, people call him Skirt. Well, we put his motor on my junior and we started running that a little bit. Like together we'd help each other and stuff like that. And we ran it a few times probably for another year, and then we started running. I have a 65 Plymouth Belvedere is what my dad had at the time. We had the Monza mm-hmm. and the Belvedere. My dad would run the Monza, and the Belvedere actually sat from 2001 until about 2007. 2006 we started working on it in the winter, and then 2007 I took it to a car show at school, and I won best car there with it, and didn't even go down the track yet, you know. And then we took it to the track, and it went like 11:50s and a quarter, and me and Skirt really didn't have nothing to run at the time, and we were like pretty much best friends, and so we just ran it together, double entered it wherever. I think there. I remember one time we were at Thompson. They had a big money race back in the day. Didn't do too well. I mean, actually, they made a split, and I made like $300 or $400, which was really cool back then. I was, you know, 17 years old, sleeping in my dad's truck. Mm-hmm. It was that was pretty cool. Don Kenny, he was with me there. He was the one like kind of watching over me. Being 17, you know, he wanted somebody there watching me, I'm sure. And but yeah, that was pretty cool. After that, I actually ran a car before the Belvedere. It was this little 69 Nova SS. I only drove it one time. My cousin actually drove it to the track because I didn't have a license, so he drove it mm-hmm. to the track at the time, and it wasn't the fastest. It went 1450s with a 350 in it, me and my dad put it together, mostly my dad back then, but we ended up selling it. He gave me the choice to, as a first car, daily driver, either a Cavalier or that Nova, and it was winter time, so I picked the Cavalier. Probably regret it at this time, but yeah, we ended up selling the Nova and putting the money into the Belvedere for me to start racing that, so... Mm-hmm. So I started running the Belvedere, and it sat from 2001 to 2007, and it came out, and people recognized it. My dad was a fairly good racer around the area, and he used to travel the B&M series back in 2000, 2001. He actually finished second, I think. He actually did pretty well. They traveled all over the place. They were like 5-10 grand races. He won quite a bit of them, actually. He was on a roll back then. That car won a lot of money. And when it came back out, people seen it. And my dad's buddy, Ron Stayer, he had a little short dragster. And he called my dad up and said, "Hey, I want that Belvedere." So my dad said, "Well, we'll go over and look at the dragster and see what you got, see what you think." We went and looked at it, checked it out. It was a small block Chevy. We've had all Mopar stuff. The Monza was set up for big block Mopar. And my dad actually won a motor that year. And he was running that. And he was having all kinds of problems with it. And it was a free motor he won. And just kept cracking this block. And they sleeved it. And it just was... By the end of the year, kind of threw it out the side, a rod out the side. So that ended our Mopar era. My dad said, "Okay, let's trade for this dragster." And we've been Chevy ever since. Mm-hmm. And after that, my dad said, "Okay, here, I'm going to run the dragster. You can run the Monza." I'm like, "Okay, that's fine." You know, so I built the motor for the Monza. And it was just a stock 350 with like Corvette heads and a decent cam. And it... Power glide, when 1090 flat tappet cam, 1090 11 flat in the quarter. We ran quarter mile back then, so I ran that for a while, and probably about 2 years. I actually had some time off in between there. I was running a street car. I had to pay for everything myself, so it took me a while to get the money to put the Monza together, let's put it that way. And because it had a blown up Mopar still, you know, and I had to start from scratch. And I put that motor in it, and that motor ended up spinning the bearings like about 5 passes out. And so we had to pull it and start over. And so I had to wait a while, and I got some deals on some... my buddy Dave Kenny, he really hooked me up on the internals of the motor. That's what I had in there until it broke this year. But I had some used internals, just some Childs and Albert rods, which they went out of business 25 years ago. So I had those in there. They had some decent pistons. They're still in the motor. They're manly 12.5-1 compression pistons. I got... it's just a standard cast crank is what was in it. And what else? It had a 640 lift cam, roller cam, Brodix track ones. But yeah, and then that I've had put that all in there, and it was on gas. And back to, you know, 1080, 1070. And with that cam, it actually made me go look. I started racing eighth mile here because I wasn't running no box too much yet, and I started running they switched to eighth mile, and it was like, it went like 660s, 658, I think, the fastest hit on gas. And then I got hooked up with Calvi Peru and Jose Diaz, and they was telling me for a long time I needed to switch to alcohol, and I finally did. And that was probably they gave me the carburetor that was off of the car after the T1000 runnered up that big race, the 100K. They gave me that carburetor to use. I was like, "Oh, okay." Mm-hmm. There's like two of them that are identical, so they came off like a tunnel ram or something. So I was using one of those, and it was really good. My car, I didn't want to give it back, and I ran it for a while, all that whole year with But yeah, the car picked the car up a good bit. I was going 630, 620s, and up, and it ran like that for about 2 years, and I finally broke the crank. That old standard cast crank came to bite me in the butt there, and put me in a bind, really. I'm in that was this year.
Is that what just happened just recently?
Yes, that is. I'm sitting pretty good in points at my home track, and I've been doing pretty well this year, and that really put a halt into my program as myself. If it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't be out there at all, probably. But we went to Summit the next day, and we pulled the motor apart. It broke the crank, the bent a rod, and cracked the block a little bit. So I needed all three of those. Cost us about $2,000. And I was going to get a steel crank, but we didn't have any in stock. And my dad is the type of person that we don't like to miss racing. So they had a cast crank in stock, and that's what I had. So that's what I got. Mm-hmm. And it's fine. I mean, we brought it all home, slapped it together. It was in the car within 2 days running. About the fifth day it was running, we ran into some problems. My torque converter was appeared to be bent. It wouldn't go. I couldn't spin it freely underneath the car there. It was hitting the tabs of the flywheel, mm-hmm. and wouldn't go past them. So we had the motor in and out of the car a few times, and I changed this other spare converter we had. We put it in, and it was fine. So, and I know this converter is usually a little slower. The stall is about 500 different, and I'm going about the same ET, a little bit slower, but probably like 700 slower. But I'm 640, 638 around there. But yeah, the motor is, I can't complain. It is I just changed the oil for the first time, and it looked great.
Well, it obviously was working pretty good on Sunday. So kind of walk us through your weekend, because I mean, and you kind of just swooped in Sunday to Dragway 42 and took the big check. So you told me you were points racing at Quaker on Saturday, right?
Yes, I was points racing at Quaker on Saturday, and I got busted first round. A guy that usually don't race box, but he started this year, actually. His name's Tyler Underwood. He really laid it on me. He was 004. I was 20, so I really couldn't make up for that against him, because he's usually going to be there. So I got wore out.
Yeah.
And that put me out for my points day. And I actually, after that, I just put it past me, and I said, all right, I'm going to try to win some money, I guess. And I got down to seven, and I got wore out by the guy who won. He his name's Bobby Randolph. He's just leading points now. He's on a tear this year. Forget how I was that race. Not really sure. But I think I was one above, and he was dead on. We were actually pretty close on the tree, I think. But, yep, after that, I went to, after the day was done, my cousin texted me and said, I got a proposition for you. And I was like, well, let's hear it. He said, well, he sent me the picture of the reduced price to $200 on their Facebook or whatever. And he said, I got $200 if you want to get in. And just prior to this, Chris Mancini called me and was asking me, hey, man, I have two entries here for sale for $100 if you want them. I'm like, I can't do it, man, So I let it go. And 20 minutes later, my cousin and text me with this, says, hey, I got $200 if you want to go. So it was either go race for free at I have a gold card for being the track champ at Magnolia, so I either go race for free at Mags, or I go race for free for $25,000 at 42. So I think I don't think Mags would pay $25,000 that day. So
right.
we drove over to 42 and took our shot.
So take us through Sunday a little bit, through the rounds. I mean, was there a particular round that you feel that was the difference maker, that kind of set the tone to get you all the way through it? Or, maybe a round that you thought, man, you got away with one there? Or, just kind of take us through the day.
Probably two rounds that really did it in. Because I rolled in the gate knowing that I turned down $100 for two entries. So I wasn't buying back for 150. It was either make it or break it first round, and if I lost first round, I was driving right on over to Magnolia to run for free. Mm-hmm. And because I could have made it. And so I go up there first. I get my new entry time run. I go 6:38. I'm 7 red. I go 6:38 with a 9 flat out on my time run. So I come up first round. It was shortly after. I mean, it wasn't too much longer. I had I think it was Scott Taylor and the Camaro Roadster, Miller Roadster, new one. He's dialed like 480. So I'm like, oh, wow, I'm not really going to be able to see this. I put 638 on it. I went 638.9, so I know I'm giving up 9 thou already. And so I rolled in to sit. I was sitting like 007, I think. And I missed it a little bit, and I was 24 and 2 above with a 9 flat out, so I was really bad. And he turns it 25 thou red. So that was the savior of the day, because like I said, if I pull against anybody in that line, pretty much I'm going home right there with my 50-60 total. So
I did one better than that fourth round, but we won't talk about that.
But the other one would be after that, the round that I started feeling really confident was after I turned the wind line on against Scotty. I think it was what round?
I was round 4. That's what I was going to bring up, because I was watching. I just watched a replay yesterday, and you were not that far behind me.
Yeah.
And that's what I was. That was right after I decided to. I just forgot to let go of the button.
Yeah, so. I pulled in line, and he was the last car to roll in the left lane, and I was like, oh, wow, okay, so this is it. Who's going to continue on from here? And I was set up 008, and I was 10. Knew the car could go 41 with a 9, and I was dialed 42. He was dialed 49. We both go 1 above. I'm 1 above 5. He's 1 above 3. We were both 10. I take 3 thou on the. I give him a couple rips, and he tries. Pretty sure he tries to drop and take it with that nose sometimes, but he dropped. I figured he would. It was coming, so I dropped right with him. 3 thou on my side. I was pretty pumped after that. I pretty much felt like I. As long as I sit 008 and this car continue, this was like the second run now that showed me. Because after first round, it slowed down to the 40 with a 9, it slowed down one more time, and that was second round. But then after that, it was printing me 412 with a 2, 412 with a 3, 412 with a 5, 412 with a 2, 412 with a 1 at the 330. So it was pretty much stuck from there on out. Because the temperature pretty much stayed the same and the track stayed the same. But I did see a difference when I kept seeing, I kept getting thrown in the left a couple times. Everyone piling that right lane. I didn't know which lane was which when I rolled into the gate. I knew they had the prior, everyone had a time run, blah, 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 that mm-hmm. type of. But I didn't know which lane was affected, so I just picked a lane and stuck to it all day. And I obviously was that lane that everybody was liking was my lane.
Right.
And, so I got stuck in the left a little bit, and I was seeing 10 different on the tree. And after the first one, I was it was second round. It was after the 24, I was like, oh, well, it didn't come up 7. I felt like I missed it a little bit, so I guess it's the 60-foot slowed down a little bit. So I'm like, well, I'm going to have to take some out. And I sure did. I ended up rolling 7 more out to be that 10. And I had a couple lucky rounds. I had one against Cameron Adkins. His car slowed down, he told me, and I'm 18, dead 1, taking 12 foul. He's 9 and 2 above, I'm sure, flat out. And So that's another one I skate by. Mm-hmm. Also, David Davis, he somehow breaks loose out here in the left lane somehow. Mm-hmm. And by the, I'm 006, he's 15, and we're right at the 330 almost. And I'm about to start driving out in front of him, and he just bails out. I noticed he was kind of driving towards the center line a little bit, but I couldn't really tell what was going on. But he told me, he said he was a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, I don't know. The left lane deal, I mean, I just went in the left lane. I'd heard about it. It happened on Friday, and I raced. What ended up with me is since I was running the lane that nobody wanted, then I just got to stay in it the whole time. And I didn't have I didn't see any issue at all. It may have been different on a tree. I didn't know because I never went in the right lane because nobody wanted the left.
Yeah, I know. That was an experience for sure. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I had to run a guy I run pretty much all the time at Quaker City. His name's Chris Mancini in the final. He's got a pretty good name for himself now. He's been out there, been traveling a lot, but he's become a pretty good driver over the past few years. Knowing from what he came from till now, he's got a lot accomplished in a short amount of time. This guy used to spray every hit off the line and from A to B. And he came up to me. He parked next to me and my dad and at Quaker City. And he'd ask me, like, man, how are you guys going rounds and stuff? He's like, what am I doing wrong, you know? And so I told him, I'm like, well, you're going to have to stop that spraying A to B, buddy. You know, you really not. You don't need to do all that. It's not all about going fast out here. So he started listening, and he started slowly turning on wind lights. Once he got this 62 or 63 or whatever Nova he's got, he started really turning on wind lights. That car really works well, and he has the right guys to help him. Nationwide Auto Works and Calvi Peru, Jose Diaz, Nick Hastings. You have all them guys telling you what to do. You're in the right place.
So what would you say for you is the most enjoyable part of drag racing?
Probably how close all the family is, and people that ain't even your family, they treat you like family, and anybody's there to help you with anything happens and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have to agree.
It shows who, you know, there's really good people still out in the world.
Yep, for sure. And drag racers are definitely a big extended family. So the nickname of Boy, where did it come from? Where was that first coined?
Well, it's not really the best story, but it's stuck for some odd reason, and it's probably never gonna go away. I used to travel all the time when I was in between that 16, 17, 18 era. I was going with Dave Kenny and Don Kenny, going racing with them a lot. And I went with Dave Kenny and Greg Fox to the 50 grander in Stanton, Michigan. I forget what year it was, but I was probably about 14 or maybe 15 at this time. And I used to help them all the time, you know, just fill the cars up, check the air, you know, just help as a kid with anything. That's just what I did. And I mean, I'm at the track every single weekend, anywhere, wherever, if my dad wasn't going, or he always goes to Quaker. So I was wanting to go out and, you know, travel, and my dad used to do that stuff, but then he stopped. Well, I wanted to start doing it again, so I started going with them. And so we were at that race, and we was sitting on the golf cart. It's late at night, me and Dave just sitting on the golf cart, and there's a big open field out there where no one's parked. And there's a guy named Ryan Pinkelman. He had a little boy with him. I don't know if it's his son or something, but he was teaching him to ride this scooter. And me and Dave is just sitting there watching him, and he was yelling, "Boy, boy, over here!" You know, he'd run over to this trash can, "Boy, over here!" And he'd be yelling his name, "Boy, boy!" And I know it's a stupid story, but we wake up the next day and Dave starts calling me, boy, get the fuel jugs, boy, check my tires, boy, do this, boy, do that. I mean, and then everybody started calling, I mean, because I looked like a little boy back then, so now I got this beard, they don't know what to call me. So boy man, or yeah, they don't, they're clueless.
Man boy.
Yeah, there you go.
So what, besides racing, what else do you do in your free time?
Well, in the winter time, my girlfriend, her dad has a her dad and uncle, they have a slot car track in the garage there, and I race slot cars for a long, long time. I'm really good friends with JP Schuster. He pretty much builds the most baddest slot cars you can ever buy, and he introduced me. He raced at my home track when I was a kid. I grew up with this kid since he was, you know, 10, whenever he started, pretty much. And we really got to know each other. Me, Skirt, and JP hung out a lot. And there's another guy, James Davies. They call him Jim Bob. We all hung out and went to the slot car track a lot. It was called Mineral Ridge. They call it the Ridge. And it was this quarter mile track, slot car track, up against the wall. Had like a ticking timing system, so you could count the clicks on the fourth click, you better be pulling the trigger, you know. So it was a really good time back then. I mean, JP is the one that introduced us. His dad built them, and like, he was starting to learn as we grew up, and that place kind of disappeared, and we moved on, went to a couple other different tracks, but we always stayed together, and JP kind of kept that together because he builds them and everyone follows that guy for him, because he does so well with them. He knows what he's doing. All of his cars work so well, and you set them on the track, they go dead on pretty much every time. He does really good work, and I'm honored to know the kid. But yeah, other than slot cars, I really don't, I take the dog out to, you know, take him to see the different places with my girlfriend and stuff. We're going to a concert tomorrow, the Nelly concert, Nelly. Nice. TLC in Flowrider.
Nice.
That should be a good little celebration. We're going with a bunch of friends and stuff, so Skirt will be there, his girlfriend, Skirt's cousin Brandon Vickers, a few other people. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, sounds like it for sure. So wanted to ask about the Monza a little bit. It's just one of those cars. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like just the bracket machine. You know, I don't know how to say it. I guess gritty would be a good way to describe it. And I love bracket cars like that. I mean, could you see yourself ever parting with it?
Oh, I would never sell that thing ever in a million lives. It has so much history and my family behind it. It's unbelievable. The Monza came from, there's this place called A&W. It's a dining place where you can pull up. They used to have classic car shows and stuff like this at, they sell burgers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of set up, it's like an old school place, but, they still have them around here. Well, it came from that. My uncle Jerry passed away. He bought this thing, from that car show. I believe my dad and them told me this thing went like nines, is what they told me. Went nines on spray with a big block Chevy. And I think they ran it like that. It was a pro street car, you know, drove it on the street. I still have the title for it. But it was just a regular street car with a cage, and it was tub, but not really well. And it was just really hoped put together when they first bought it, to be honest, probably. And they got it, and they started racing it. My uncle raced it. It was my uncle's for a long time. It had Taz on the side of the door. I still got the Taz sticker on the back window and Taz mm-hmm. license plate. But he had that thing on. He ran it like that for a while with a big block Mopar, because that's what we was. You know, we ran Mopars, and that, they set it up for big block Mopar, and that thing used to leave literally sideways, passenger side up. looked like two wheels was on the ground when I was and but yeah, it was that thing used to leave all cowie-wampus, and but my dad bought it off of my uncle bought some dragster, and he wanted to get rid of the Monza. He had a Cuda as well, and so my dad bought the Monza. He wanted to have two running cars, or not running cars, but where he could take the motor out or whatever. He wanted two cars. He wanted the Belvedere and the Monza. So we got the Monza, and my dad retubbed it and put a bunch of work in the front end, changed all the bushings and stuff, and put new shocks on it, and had a whole fabbed rear end where they narrowed the rear end to almost as a width of a dragster, and that really helped the car. It came out, and my dad started really winning in that thing. He won the 10 grand nationals in the Monza on Friday 2004, I believe, and he didn't travel that much. That was like his biggest, you know, that's the farthest we're going, you know. So, but back in the day, he would travel all over, but as he got older, he'd stick to a Quaker a lot. But the Monza, after that, it sat after, you know, my dad got it running good. We got the dragster, then the Monza sat for a little bit until I got the motor ready. So it sat for probably 4 years, I'd say, because I was young and living it up, you know, being young and not putting my mind to where I needed to be. Well, I finally got it together and got it running. And I, like I already told you before, I ran it. But before that, the 4 years, you know, my dad had this swimming pool sitting on the back of it. Mm-hmm. And a blow-up swimming pool from my nieces and stuff. And it had a little bit of water in it. So it rusted my hatch completely out almost. And you wouldn't be able to tell now that I got that wing. But if I didn't have the wing until once I put the motor in, I put the wing on. But that thing's all rusty and paint's missing. Or else it'd even look a little worse. Yeah, the front end's falling off just about. It needs some love, and it's going to get some this winter for sure. I don't know who's going to do it or what's going to happen, but I need to find some kind of love for it. It's been painted a few times in my garage, but if it comes down to it, that's what will happen again.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely given you guys a lot of love, it sounds like, and a lot of good times and wins over the years. So that's awesome. And I was hoping that was going to be your answer, that you wouldn't sell it. So I kind of would have bet that was going to be your answer before you gave it. So that's awesome. So what's next? I mean, what would you say is your next big goal that you'd like to achieve in the sport?
I really want a box world championship. IHRA is mm-hmm. what I would really like. I didn't even join IHRA this year, and I'm second in points. So probably going to, well, I don't know if I'm second. I was second. They haven't came out with the results yet, but I really won an IHRA championship. The Mags championship, that's an outlaw track, so it's really, it's like a little slap on the wrist kind of to IHRA. You know, that's got a little bit bigger name for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doubting the Mags championship, but it's just worth more to me. The No Box championship was cool. I really don't race No Box. I'm not really that good, but some days I can really crush the tree off the bottom, and then some days I am just shouldn't be there.
Yeah, that's what I finally learned, to just stop trying. I'm just going to run Super Pro. I got beat up enough to just learn my lesson and quit.
Oh, yeah, that happens a lot. There's a lot of bad dudes over at my home track and that run over there in No Box, and they, you run into them, they'll beat you up pretty good.
What do you think about, what do you think about the direction of bracket racing now? I mean, this is a question we posed almost every guest that we've had on the show, but I'm interested to hear everybody's take on it and their different opinions. I mean, these purses are getting crazy big. I mean, right before we were just chatting before we started the interview, and, you know, SFG announces $1.1 million paid to the winner on July 4th next year. And it's just getting insane, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a lot of money, buddy. More than I can dream of.
Yeah,
I could never afford to get to that race, I tell you that. Just the entry fees are really high for me. They're like mouth drooling is when you hear of them.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to win something like that, but my situation, I won this money and all that, but I still got the same mentality pretty much. I can't afford nothing like that. I had a mindset of $400 is pretty much my limit on a weekend, you know. That's mm-hmm. for a whole weekend. That pretty much anything over that, that's a little out of my price range. The way my situation is, and maybe over time it'll change, but as of right now, that's just how it is. And I'd love to go to them races, and my cousins are really starting to help me out. They put me in this race, and they're on board. They want to go on for this 5-10-5 this weekend at Quaker and see what happens from there. But so we'll maybe the ball will keep rolling, or maybe the ball will fall off. Let's see. 50 shot.
I don't have too many of these, but as far as getting into length on this interview, I don't think it'll be a big deal. Just to do a quick, I want to do a quick few this or that questions. So just tell me which one you pick, and we may ask a follow up or something like that. But are you up for that?
Yep, shoot it up.
All right. Comedy or action movies?
Comedy.
Favorite movie? Favorite comedy?
Pineapple Express.
Nice. That's a good one. NASCAR or sprint cars?
Ooh, man. I've only been to a couple sprint cars, maybe one in my whole life, I think. Maybe two. But that was pretty tough, man. That stuff, dirt flinging in your beer, people wearing safety glasses and stuff like that. That was pretty tough. I've never been to a NASCAR race, but I would love to. My grandpa that passed away, he really was into NASCAR big time, and he loved Dale Earnhardt. And my mom, she was growing up as a kid, she was so into Dale Earnhardt Jr. Like, as I probably when Dale Earnhardt died, she was a real freaking diehard Dale Earnhardt Jr. fan for a long time until he retired. Still wish he would probably drive. But, yeah, we got all this stuff in my parents' house. She's got piled to the ceilings of Dale Earnhardt stuff in a whole room you could probably fit it in.
Yeah. I would say, man, sprint car is awesome to watch. I'd say you go to sprint car race to watch a race, and NASCAR race, you go for the party. But Talladega, I've been there, and it was a great party, I can tell you that.
Really? I've never been to one, but I would love to go to one.
All right. Waffles or pancakes?
I'd probably pick NASCAR.
NASCAR? Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I guess I didn't let you get a chance to actually answer that question.
Oh, it's all right.
Waffles or pancakes?
Pancakes.
Rock music or country music?
I take both? Can I take both?
You can take both.
All right, because, yeah. Kid Rock, he's a little country and he's a little rock and roll.
Right. Is that your favorite? What's your favorite group?
No, he ain't my favorite, but I'm just saying there's a little bit of both ways.
Right.
My favorite singer? Oh, man, I couldn't even tell you. Probably some Hank Williams Jr., man. That hits home.
Right. Old school. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Old school country, buddy.
All right. Well, that's good. What's something, can you name one thing that most people just wouldn't guess or don't know about you?
Huh. Just your regular guy working freaking 7 to 5.
What do you do for a living?
I fertilize grass, buddy.
Nice.
Make it grow for people to cut it.
Hey, man, that's what pays the bills. That's all good.
Yeah. Awesome. All right.
All right. Well, I think we're about to wrap this up. I wanted to give you a chance, thank anybody you want to thank, sponsors, anybody that you want to give a shout out to. Now's your time, buddy.
First and foremost, just my parents, my mom and dad, they really do a lot for me. If it wasn't for them, I probably wouldn't even be racing. My girlfriend, she's gone at the moment. She'll be home tomorrow. She's out working in Denver, Colorado, I think. And, she's a social worker, and, she goes to these, trainings out. They send her different places. And this time was, Denver, Colorado. And she's sending me pictures from there. And man, it is, it's really beautiful there. I've never been there. And she told me, man, this is where we got to go on our honeymoon. It is that beautiful. And so her and my dog, I couldn't do it without them. I'm with them every day, man. My cousins that put me into the race. I wouldn't be doing this interview if it wasn't for them. Hopefully, like I said, we can keep the ball rolling on this little deal we got going on, and we'll see how things go. And my uncle Roger and my cousin Chester, they came over and helped us with the 5-day turnaround on getting my car back together. And that's how my family is. My cousin Chester, he races. My uncle Roger, he races. It's my dad, and there's another guy. His name's Chuck Phillipson. He races. It's a whole little group there. If anything happens, man, we're always there. And my uncle, he lives right down the street from my dad, and they're always over there helping each other out if anything goes wrong or if something needs worked on. And so those guys really help me out a lot when stuff needs done. And my buddy Skirt, Justin Vickers, him, JP, Jim Bob Davies, those guys really do a lot for me. Just anything little, man, wherever they can help me out. Like Jim Bob, he gave me the 10 gallons. I didn't have any fuel to go to SFG, and I was scrambling around. Oh, man, where am I going to get some fuel? And Jim Bob was the last person I asked. I said, hey, you got 10 gallons? He's like, 10 gallons, that's all you need? I'm like, 10 gallons all I need, buddy. And I used every last little bit.
Yeah, down to the last drop, right?
Yeah, I used it all. So those guys helped me out. The guy who builds my trannies, Rob McCray, he's the track manager at Magnolia. I mean, I've been friends with this guy for a long, long time, 15, 20 years, it feels like. He builds the best tranny I could ever ask for, man. I haven't took that thing out in a year and a half. So, it's doing his job. We only take it out if something's wrong. And, I let him drive the car all the time, and my car, he lets me drive his, or we always try to split a trip. We split the trip down to Virginia this March 15th. It was my birthday. He split the trip with me to go we double entered. He got an entry. I got an entry. We was just going to split one entry. Whoever did better drove on Sunday, but we ended up getting enough money to where we can both race. That was pretty cool. But he does a lot for me. Helps me out in every which way he can. And Dave Kinney, Don Kinney, their dad that's passed, Jim Kinney, he's done a lot for me. That whole family, Kristen, Kate, Polly, Helen, them, that's like my second family pretty much. Me and Skirt would be over there every weekend when we was not driving, and people would drop us off there. My parents would drop me off there, and I'd stay for almost a whole summer, it felt like. They really took me under their wing like I was their own. And that, like I said, that comes back to the racing thing, why I love it so much. Just people like that. I would have never met people like that. And they mean a lot to me. And let's see, Nationwide Auto Works, man. The car wouldn't be where it's at today if it wasn't for him. Calvi Peru, that's the man when it comes to setting up a bracket car, man. That guy's the smartest guy there is when it comes to bracket racing. I feel like him and Jose Diaz and Nick Hastings, them three guys, man, they have a lot of intelligence when it comes to bracket racing. You get a lot of information. I worked for them for a short period of time until me and my girlfriend got back together. It was a far drive for me, and she really didn't like me traveling too much. She liked to see me a little bit, so I just found a job closer to home. And they, yeah. Nationwide,
women are funny
me
like that. Like to see every now and then.
Oh yeah, she makes sure she sees me enough, that's for sure. the Nationwide family, man, them people are, they really, the car wouldn't be where it's at today, like I said. That very intelligent over there. And and Chrissy's family, Bobby Joe Bayes, and or actually Freeman now, I'm sorry, Bobby Joe Freeman, she's married to Kyle Freeman, and they have about to be a 1-year-old here soon, Emma Joe. And Chrissy's dad, and his name's Rick Bayes, and her mom, Barb Smith, they help me out, and not in any racing way, but in any way they can, you know. Rick helps me out with the racing. He gives me some fuel scent they sell the Wild Willie's fuel scent, and he hooks me up with the fuel scent every now and then for Christmas and all that. It's kind of fun. My grandparents and all my everybody in my family that support me and that just tell me good job and keep doing it, and people that I really, some people I've looked up to my whole life, you know, and they cheer me on and tell me good job. That's like an accomplishment for me. And my Uncle Jerry that has passed, really wish, I'm sure he's smiling down on me, him and my my grandpa that's passed. I'm sure they're all smiling down on me watching, getting every last minute of this this win, just letting it soak in. That, and the track crew. I used to work at the track. I used to work at Magnolia myself. I was an announcer. I prepped the racetrack. I worked the staging lane. I did everything. Everything but hand out tickets, pretty much. And that was a good experience. That was with Dave Kinney, and his dad was running the track, Jim Kinney. That was a really good time, and that I met some people that are still in my life today, and some of them still work there, and they race themselves, and they're really good friends of mine. Cody, Bryson, Kurt, Jeremy, their dad Dan. Another guy who helped me put the car together when it was in its rest mode, and right before I got it back out, a couple guys helped me with it. Bill Keller and one of my buddies that live around here, his name's Ben, his last name's Birkebile, and they really helped me put the car together. I mean, the rear end, at one point, my dad broke a rear end in the dragster, and he wanted to put the rear end in the Monza shortened as a dragster, so he thought that this would work. Mm-hmm. He thought that putting that rear end under the Monza, under the dragster, would work. That's a 9-inch, and the dragster's got an 8¾ Chrysler. Well, let's just say it didn't line up. So my dad just slid it back under there, you know, and that was that. So I put that in there. Me, Bill Keller, my buddy Ben, we put it in there. I don't know how to hook a 4-link up or anything. I bolted it up to where where it looked like it was before, and that was it. Had to do a couple adjustments, of course, but I was close. It was pretty cool. But yeah, he helped me out a lot getting the car back together and the first time. And another guy I'd like to thank, Brian McCaddy. He hooked me up with a battery one time. I pooped a battery one time. He gave me a battery and he ended up told me, just keep it, man. I don't need it. Yeah. So that was very thoughtful, that guy, and I'm sure you'd do anything else to help me. Scott Chitty, Troy Harp, Beef and Bruce, them guys, when my motor broke, them guys was one of the first ones there, pretty much offering me stuff and parts and help. And the guy that, after my car broke that day, never drove I've drove a dragster before, but I've never drove a dragster, a suspended dragster, let's put it that. My dad's is a suspended, but it's a shorty. I've never drove a full-length suspended dragster, let's say a newer one. And I got to drive Mike Galati's dragster, and that, it's like, I don't know, 14 or 15, 16, I don't know. Diamond goes like 470s. And when my car broke, he said, hop on in, man. And like I said, I've never really been that fast. He really didn't care. He just said, I trust you and get after it. I know you're a good driver. So I'm like, all right, let's try it out. And I went 475. He told me to roll a bunch in, and I did. He told me to roll 50 in. He said he's an old man, and I'm going to be faster than him. But so I rolled 50 in. I was 80 on a tree. that wasn't a good idea. But it was a good experience. It was fun. I'd love to do it again, man. That was fast and fun. Chris Mancini, that guy, he calls me much twice a week, man. He always asking me what I'm doing, where I'm going, and he helps me out. If I need money, he'll hook me up, or if I, you know, he's that type of person. He's a very stand up dude, and he'd do that with anybody. Jeremy Barkheimer, he bought me in a race a few weeks ago. I didn't do any good, but he took the chance, and That's what, nothing came out of it, but he still, he thought of that I was decent enough to put his monies on. Didn't come out that way, but he was one of the first ones to text me and said, I put you in the wrong race. a couple other people, Mikey Maddy and CJ Yeager, them guys are pretty cool dudes that I hung out with in Norwalk, and him and Charlie Moore and Michael Madey and a few others. When I wasn't racing the Monza, Skirt started driving an S10, and I was just going with him every now and then, you know, pretty much every time. But he was running points at Norwalk, and I met a bunch of people at Norwalk, and it was a pretty good time. And that was a pretty fun year. Other than I went blank there.
Oh, you're good.
All right, I got a couple other more people to thank.
Okay.
One main group that blows up my phone pretty much every day. It's a Snapchat group. It's called YDS. It's called Jaeger's Drunken Snaps. And this is a group of guys that will keep you on your toes, buddy. They send you from anything you can think of and anything under the moon and sun. From racing to women to beer to anything you can imagine. It's a pretty good time, and there's 32 guys, and it's all elite racers. Let's just put it that way. 32 elite racers that knows what's going on, and there are some pretty talented drivers in there, and then some guys that just stick to announcing for a reason. I'm just kidding.
we won't name names.
Yeah. But other than that, that's about all I really have people to thank. The people or the companies that really power the Monza would be McRae Transmissions. I have the quick draw converter. Mine got messed up, but the one that's in it is actually an Abruzzi, so I won on an Abruzzi converter, but I usually run quick draw. I have a Holly Carb from Summit. Bought it right out of the box. That thing freaking worked wonders, man. I had to do a little work to it. It had power valves in it. I had to put block off, stuff like that. Mm. Other than that, that thing works really well for the price. I mean, $733 right out of the box. That thing goes. I won both classes with it the first day I ever put it on the car. That thing works good. Me and my dad, we build the motors in the garage ourselves. Pretty simple process for me and him. He's done it so many times that I pretty much got to do it by myself now. He's just standing there watching over, making sure I don't do nothing wrong. Good old MSD6AL, you know, that's pretty much the only thing that she's ever known. That's the only thing that's ever been in there. Summit, we live 20 minutes away from Summit, so anything's a drive away, you know, so as long as I got it in stock, that's for sure. We've been running into that problem a lot. Haven't been stocking a lot of things lately, but I've never bought one set of brand new tires for my car. Rear ones, let's just put it. I bought new front ones, but I use my dad's every single year. So some used Hoosiers is what powers the old Monza.
Nice. Well, that's awesome, man. I think it's a testament to the type of guy you are, Mike, to all the people that you had to thank there that help you get it, you know, on the track and down the road. And that's awesome. And man, it's, you know, it's been great talking to you. And this has been a really fun interview. I was looking forward to it all day, and it definitely delivered. I can definitely say, I mean, listening to your story, it's similar to mine in a lot of ways. So we're cut from the same cloth, my friend, and certainly enjoyed having you here on Dialed In, and go win some more races so we can have you on again.
Oh, absolutely, but I'm hoping to do it this weekend.
Right on. So thanks again, and appreciate you getting the stickers. Appreciate the support. I know you said you listen to the show and like it, and we certainly appreciate that. So best of luck to you, buddy, going down the road, and you know, keep it safe, and keep turning on the wind lights.
I appreciate it, and thanks. You guys do a great work on this podcast, man. Just keep up the great work.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
What's up, Dialed In listeners? This is Luke Bogacki for ThisIsBracketRacing.com. Do you drive the finish line more like Ray Ray Miller or more like Ray Charles? Not to worry, we can help. There are two keys to success at the finish line. The first is understanding. The second, execution. One feeds the other. Seat time alone isn't the answer unless you know exactly what it is that you're trying to accomplish and why. What we do on This Is Bracket Racing feeds into the understanding element, and understanding is what makes execution possible. One of my favorite training resources on thisisbracketracing.com is a video that we put together on working on the finish line weakness. Exclusively for you, Dialed In listeners, we're giving away access to that for free. To take advantage, visit thisisbracketracing.com/dialed stripe. Again, thisisbracketracing.com/dialed for the Dialed In podcast. Stripe, all one word. Dialed, stripe.
So our actual In Motion Solutions final round discussion this week is one that is very near and dear to my heart. one that, you know, it kind of went viral there for a minute. As I said to Gary Don at Drag Champ, you know, I kind of like, I'm a really nice redneck. I like to, you know, light a bonfire and sit back and be proud of it. But there was a run Friday night at round number 5 or 6 that I was staging up against a door car, and we were down to the latter round, and he lost lane choice. I roll up. I'm getting ready to pre-stage, and as I light my pre-stage bulb, they had the massive portable construction work lights shining on the starting line. The only light available on the starting line went out. I mean, it changed the whole scene of the racetrack, and I backed up because I thought, you know, hey, they're going to shut us off right here. You know, obviously the whole scene of the starting line changed. You can't see the hand in front of your face. He's still pre-staged. Probably sit there 10, 15 seconds. They don't wave us off. So I roll back in. I stage. My guy lets go 60. I'm 12 and 2 above and go on the next round. Didn't hear anything about it. Didn't hear any naysay. Didn't hear any backlash. Nothing. They stopped the race after we went down the racetrack and fixed the light before they continued on with the round. Fast forward to Sunday. I'm down to round number 4 with the same car that the light went out on. And I let go and my wind light doesn't come on. It's all right. Not a big deal. He's down 5 flat. And, you know, I think that maybe he's having a seizure over there. I was kind of concerned about his health, his well-being. I heard the gas pedal beat the floorboard about, I counted to 17 to be exact before, and I actually missed a few to start with, but I counted. And, you know, I thought, you know, really, that's pretty uncalled for. That's pretty moronic. You know, I said that in a Facebook post. I said that's acting like a moron. You know, you really made it whenever somebody feels like they've won the whole race. They're going to blow up an $80,000 Camaro just to let you know they won the race. Like you don't see the wind lights on. You know, we race for such high stakes anymore. Like we put everything we've got into this, and it doesn't feel good when we lose, especially whenever you've got entry fees and tabs up to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and somebody to, you know, beat the floorboard out of the race car just to tell you that they won. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I went up to the starting line to watch Zach the next round, and the same guy won. Turned around, gives me a thumbs up. His dad does, or stepdad, or whoever he was. You know, I never met the man. I couldn't tell you the kid's name at that time. I still don't remember his name. I nodded at him, you know, congratulations. And he flew back there and he said, I heard you called me a moron. I said, no, sir. I said, what your son did was pretty moronic. I said, this is pretty disrespectful. And I guess that they had a problem with the staging thing Friday night. And, you know, this is kind of a prolonged story. However, I said, well, if, you know, he was paying attention, the whole scene of the starting line changed. I figured they were going to shut the cars off. I said, when they didn't shut the cars off, I went back and staged. I'm sorry if you thought that I was playing some kind of mind games, but I know you guys have been like right in front of me or right behind me all weekend, and I haven't done it another time all weekend. So I feel like if that was what I was doing, I'd probably do it more often than once of the whole weekend, especially when it worked, whenever you let go 60. I'd do that every round if that's what I knew was going to happen. So right. my thought on it is, come on, grow up. And you know, Caleb Ellison kind of argued a little bit with me, and I'm not saying he's right or wrong, but he said it's kind of like turning the wheel in a dragster or in a door car when somebody doesn't want to stage. But I feel like that's a little different. The race isn't already over at that point. You know, that's a, hey, let's go, let's get this thing moving, we'll deal with it from there. Not a, hey, you've already lost, watch this. And you can't call them Scotties, because Scotty said it's what you do before the finish line, and after you go through the finish line, your foot just has a little bit of muscle memory going on. So, yeah, that's what happened. And, you know, I don't know what you think about it, how you feel about it. I know that Chandler had a really big a really big blow up about it.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's what I was gonna talk about. You know, I mean, this happened years ago at Chandler, and the Stomp the Womp campaign was started. People were upset about it, and I will tell you that in my younger days of racing, I have done it, and I never did it thinking that I was slighting the other driver. I did it because I was celebrating that I turned the wind light on, but then I realized, as many people told me, how much that they didn't like that was a disrespectful thing to do, and I stopped. And, you know, I got to thinking about it more and more, and I thought, yeah, that is pretty stupid. You know, I mean, I don't know. Call it showing off or whatever. It wasn't right. And I quit doing it. And but that was the reason, like I said, I wasn't trying to slight somebody. I was just happy that I won. But I totally see it from the other side. You know, slow down and get your car off the track safely.
Well,
go back to your pits. And if you know, you don't have to go tell the other guy good race. You don't have to like the other person. You don't have to, you could straight up hate the person in the other lane. Not that I don't think very many people in our sport hate each other, but you don't need to do that. You know, just run your race.
But, you know, and that's kind of what I said was, you know, one womp, two womps, you know, that's cool. Four or five womps. Okay. You're a prick. You know, 10 or more, grow up. That's plenty. There's no need for that.
I watched the Motor Mania. I wasn't so sure he had it in neutral when he started doing it at first.
Oh no! He tried to crash it. I mean, it was still in gear. Oh yeah, it was still in gear because it was going away from me pretty rapidly, and I made the first turn off for the first time all weekend. But I wisely decided just to go to the ticket booth and go to the trailer.
Yeah, yeah, you're already going 100 and whatever he was going, 130 whatever, and
136 mile an hour. Yeah. Yeah, right, he drove now, 10 and 2. Yeah, he didn't look over at all.
And now you're past the finish line on the top end of the track where there isn't any grip and you're still wailing on the gas at that fast. That's dangerous. Very lucky that it's something that it didn't break loose or something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know how, the young man's age was. I just think that maybe if you look back on it, you hear what Jake is saying. He wasn't trying to play games with you. The light went up on a starting line, you know. That should be understandable. But I also think that there are drivers out there. There are people out there in general, let alone whether they're drivers or not, that they tend to they want to have some type of a chip on their shoulder. If that makes any sense, because right. that makes them rise to some type. You know, maybe makes them they feel like okay, now I'm. You know, they feel like I got to get amped up. I got to take this guy out. You know, he did this to me. Well. They feel like they got to create something in order to, you know, have that situation so that allows them to get pumped up because then they drive better or they execute at whatever they're doing better. So, you know, maybe that was a little the case too. I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, I understand it. I get it. But if you got a problem with me Friday night, don't let it simmer all weekend.
Yeah, that's true. That's what it was about. Came and asked you.
Yeah. And if you look at the live feed on Motor Mania, if you literally just watch it in regular time, the only thing you can see it on the racetrack are literally the two dial boards lit up. That's all you can see. You can't see the cars. You can't see the people. I mean, literally all you can see is the two dial boards lit up until they flip it to the swing camera. That's it. That's why I backed up. There you go. Let us hear how you feel about Scotty's. Scotty says that he thinks we all forgot who he was and how he used to do it back in the day. But let us know what you think. Tell us how you feel about getting ripped up on after you just, you know, lose a round four of a 20 grander to a nice, respectful young man.
Thank you, everybody, for being patient for us to come out with this episode. We're very sorry that it took so long. But I have heard in the last couple of weeks more people coming up to me and, man, I really like the show, really enjoy listening to it. I think you guys do a great job. And, man, that really motivated me. You know, it really made me think that we really do need to keep doing this because it's important to people. And, you know, and I know that it's hard for Jake and I to find time. Jake is doing 10 million things right now and trying to get this race, the Working Man 10 Grands, going on this weekend at Wagler Motorsports Park. So he is working his butt off, you know, his first promotion deal. It's going to be a great race, guaranteed purses at a great track. We're excited to head up there this weekend. So, anybody from out here that's listening, you know, or from anywhere for that matter, but definitely from around the area, we've been needing some big money races in this area. You know, I'm tired of driving. I will keep doing it, but I'm tired of driving 4 or 5 plus hours, 7, 8 hours to get to a decent paying race that I want to race at. So, you know, really glad that this is happening close to home, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck, buddy. I think it's going to be a great success. I think the locals around here, or the region for that matter, is going to come support you in droves.
Well, I sure hope so, and I think we're going to have a good time. And, you know, it's not going to be one of those race till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a good meal, and we've got a barbecue truck there that y'all don't know about. It's going to be pretty life-changing if you like pulled pork and barbecue, because it's a food truck locally to me, and they're going to end up doing most of the concessions all weekend. I think the Waggler concession stand is going to deal with mostly just ice and drinks and little stuff like that. So, parking opens up Thursday at noon, and we'll see everybody at Waggler Motorsports Park for the inaugural Working Man's 10 Grands. And if you can't catch it in person, catch it live on Motor Mania. It'll be live on, I think Motor Mania, it's what, Team 1? Yeah, Mark and Joanne are going to be there. So, I know there's already a rig parked in there, but it's just, you know, one of the owner's rigs, so that happens. I will be there tomorrow night. We're going to scrape it. We're going to wash it. We're going to spray it, rotate it, spray it again, drag it, and we're going to have a good time at Waggler, and sure hope to see everybody there. We'll see you guys in the staging lanes for episode 45. Get a hold of Zach for some stickers. We've got plenty of those. I've got one set left. Please just message Zach.
Yep, hit me up. I'll get them out to you. Thanks again for everybody. Make sure wherever you find this podcast that you subscribe. That way you're the first one to find out whenever we come out with another episode. You'll get a notification. You know, you can even set up for auto download so it's ready to go. So you can listen to it on your next ride to the racetrack, your ride to work, or at home, whenever you're just messing around the house, in the garage. However you listen, just please keep listening and tell your buddies that you like Dialed In, and they should listen to it too. So thank you all. We appreciate it. And Jake, I don't know if you realize this, but our next one is going to be about year anniversary time.
Oh boy, we got to think of something crazy. Special there.
Pretty crazy that we've been subjecting ourselves to this for a year now, huh?
I feel violated.
So everybody, be safe this weekend wherever you're headed. You know, and make sure, no matter what, that you stay dialed in.